North Africa in the 4th century became the cockpit of a terrible dilemma for the Christian church. The Roman Empire had recently legitimated the Christian faith, a dramatic change from the terrible persecutions it had dished out just before that. Now, two categories of Christians uneasily faced each other. There were those who had given way under persecution to save themselves and their families. And there were those who had stuck with it and who had watched people close to them being martyred. Eventually, the tension became unbearable, and the church slipped into the Donatists, the hardliners, who said that there should be no readmittance for the backsliders, and the Catholics, who were prepared to give a welcome to those who let the side down after they had done their penance. At first, the Catholics were very much in the minority, until the pugnacious St. Augustine came along and outwitted, overmastered, and out-argued the Donatists. The church, he said, should be a school for sinners as well as a training ground for saints. He used the parable of the wheat and the tares to point out that until Judgment Day, the church would contain a mixture of heroes and shirkers and quiet faithful ones, and often it wouldn't be clear who was who until God finally sorted everything out. Meanwhile, we should give each other the benefit of the doubt and just assume that we were all under the mercy and the judgment of God. The dilemma repeats itself again and again in the life of the church. It is hardly surprising that because this situation occurred right at the start. If these had been normal times and we were able to have the Palm Sunday liturgy in its fullness, we would have just heard the story of a group of people who couldn't go the distance, who, in Matthew's version, let their inspiring friend down, and who at different stages in the story betray him. Judas has decided to sell Jesus down the river before the story even starts. Sitting at table with the leader he is very disappointed in, he's already decided in his heart that he's had enough. All that is needed now is the appropriate time and place to do the deed. Three of the disciples have decided to go with Jesus into that terrible, endless night and stick it out to the end. But they fall asleep in the Garden of Gethsemane. They leave their friend terribly alone as he waits in these final hours of freedom, wondering if he should make a run for it, hoping that God will provide a way out, digging down deep into the final resources of courage to accept the Father's will. When the arrest is made, they let it and remove themselves from the passion narrative. Peter manages to make it into the next stage of the story. Maybe he fell asleep too, but he grits his teeth and tags along into that famous courtyard, hoping like heck that there'll be a rescue attempt, human or divine, to reverse the situation. When that doesn't happen, he gives up also. More than all the others, he realizes with bitter regret how far he has fallen from his original intentions. Nobody, it would seem, gets off the hook in this story. The Jewish religious authorities loathe and despise the Romans, but that doesn't stop them colluding with their local representative and manipulating him into a hanging party. And Pilate, who's supposed to be the impartial responsibility figure who stands above the local petty squabbling, gives way under pressure, despite the clear warning from his wife to stay out of it. Where this story finds us, locates us, connects with us, will often be at the point of our own betrayals. We would be unusual Christians if there weren't times when we let the side down, went back on our promises, silently colluded with dishonesty, or even deliberately turned our back on God and his call on us, because we were filled with a spirit of rebellion and disobedience. We too are the community of traitors, the company of betrayers, living out again and again the pattern of this story that will be before us this Holy Week. But God has thought of all this, has anticipated the likely outcome of our faltering attempts to follow in the way. There is a new way of doing things in this household that addresses the situation. It is called forgiveness. In our society, we're always hearing about people moving on after setbacks. We're always hearing sayings like, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. It rather indicates that people are not disposed to plumb the depths of their moral failures, or to linger on the implications of why they went wrong. And sometimes, when people do fess up and take the rap for what they've done, they do it in such an arrogant way that you would wonder if they'd learned anything. In our Christian way of doing things, the assumption is that when you confess your betrayals and put yourself into the hands of Christ the healer with sorrow and contrition, then the place of moral failure becomes the place of moral and spiritual regeneration. Robin Williams used to say to us at Mirfield that the sacrament of failure teaches us things that we would never learn any other way. It obliges us to leave behind the superficiality, the glibness, the laziness, and the easy compromises that let us and everybody else down. It obliges us to live at a greater depth and to rely more on the mercy and cleansing judgment of God. Where Judas went wrong was in assuming that there was no way back from his terrible sin into the mercy and forgiveness of God. Where the Donatists went wrong was in assuming that Christianity is a competitive event in which only heroes and martyrs set the minimum standard of belonging. Where Augustine and the Catholics were right was in their assumption that forgiveness is the charter of the Church. What qualified Peter to move into the top slot in the Church's leadership was his willingness to begin all over again, to take the measure of his failure and weakness against the wideness of God's mercy. These two ways represent the choice before each one of us at the start of Holy Week. Have we the courage to deal with our betrayals by living into the way of forgiveness? Are we prepared to learn from the sacrament of failure? Do we view the Church, in the words of a former Bishop of London, as the trade union of the damned? Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.